Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Hard Shoulder
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Well, joining me now to place his reads on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf is Fergus Finlay, columnist with the Irish Examiner. Fergus, lovely to have you in the studio for this conversation.
And it's lovely to be here, not to be talking about anything controversial or difficult or unpleasant.
I know, something.
But we could try.
Well, we'll probably get there, knowing you and I. Are you a reader?
I'm not as much of a reader as I was, and it's the internet that has destroyed me. I spend half my life on the computer. I do an awful lot of research, so I spend half my life looking stuff up. So at the end of the day, it takes something special to kind of draw me. But I always have a book by the bedside. I always have a book on the telly beside me, the telly table beside me, and I pick them up all the time. Yeah.
So you always have something on the go, but whether or not it totally engages you or is the type of book that makes you go to bed 45 minutes early is another thing.
It's been years since I went to bed to read a book, I have to be honest. I go to bed now to conk out. But I love books, and I've always loved books. When we moved house 5 or 6 years ago, we downsized, as they say, and I had to get rid of about 2,000 books, and it killed me. It broke my heart. And it took me weeks and weeks and weeks to sort out what I was prepared to part with and what I wanted to keep. And I still have a thousand.
That you had bought over the years. Are you one of these people that can't walk past a bookshop?
I used to be. I'm a bit less of that now. But I used to be, and I had a huge collection, and I'd read every one of them, and I loved them and treasured them. And I wept over them when I had to part with them. And I've written a few as well, and they somehow or other didn't manage to get thrown out.
You kept your own. You say you wept over them, so they really meant something to you. They represented
they
something
do, and
to
I still
you.
Feel,
what is that?
Well, I don't know what it is. It's the handling, the heft, the feel, sometimes the smell of a book. One of the books I brought in today is a book that's been on my bookshelf for, I don't know, maybe 30 years. And I love picking it up and sniffing it. It just brings back a day when I opened that book. And I'll tell you that story in a minute. There's just something about a book which I'd never own a Kindle. I'd never want to own a Kindle. Although there's a lot to be said. I've been on holidays with people who brought a Kindle with them when I was lugging around a bag of books. And there's a lot to be said for that from a convenience point of view. But it doesn't smell the same, feel the same, doesn't have the same vibe.
And how did you choose the 1,000 that you saved and the 2,000 that were tossed to a charity, I'm sure, nearby?
Broke my heart to make those choices. It was like choosing between my children, if that isn't a terrible and awful thing to say. But it did break my heart. And in the end, it's a bit like, when you are moving house, if you decide to downsize and so on, the first advice you're given is don't ever go into the attic. There's nothing in the attic that you've seen for 30 years, except maybe Christmas decorations. Don't ever go into the attic. I was told, hire two young fellas from the neighbourhood, send them in, tell them to empty the attic into a skip, but don't go in yourself. Of course, I went in myself.
And down memory lane.
And I emerged 3 weeks later with Emma's inter-cert report and, you know, stuff from Vicky when she was in school. All my kids' stuff was in the attic, and we ended up making boxes of stuff from the attic for them to take away. All of which they looked and said, oh God, do we have to? They didn't want it, but we had kept it for years and years and years. So these are very hard decisions to make, really hard decisions, because it's your life. You invest your bits of your growing and old, aging and changing in everything you do of that sort, particularly actually books. Books, to me, signify moments.
Let me just start then, Fergus. Given the fact that you have this sort of emotional attachment to books, they've seemed to have meant something to you throughout your life. How difficult was it to pick your favourite book of all time, and you've chosen At Swim, Two Birds by Flann O'Brien?
It was difficult because I'm a biography reader, really, a huge volume of my books are political biographies. And I love American political biographies, British political biographies. I read every one of the books about number Johnson and 10, May and 10. Jeez, I've forgotten the name of the guy who's written them. But I love political biographies. So this wasn't a natural choice for me. But it's a book that's kind of about me in a funny sort of way. I don't know if you're familiar with That Swim Two Birds. And it's probably out of fashion now. It's probably got a bit out of style. It was written by a man whose name on the cover is Flann O'Brien. His real name was Breed O'Nulon. He called himself Flann O'Brien for the purpose of writing books. And he wrote a very, very famous newspaper column for years and years. One of the funniest columns ever written under the name Miles Nicopoline. And he had these clever, clever columns with brilliant punchlines. I can remember one about two Arabs who fell out over which country they were from and so on. And at the end of the day, they had to agree to differ. And his punchline on the thing was, one man's mead is another man's Persian. So it was full of that kind of quirky kind of humour. This book, though, is a biography of me, and that's why I fell in love with it the day I read it.
I'm a bit worried that this is a biography of you. It's described as a story of a young, lazy and frequently drunk Irish college student. Was that you, Fergus?
When I started reading that book in my early 20s, I was a morose, withdrawn, introverted student who loved alcohol and who loved lying in the bed pretending to be sick. And very often was sick as a result of the alcohol. I was not in a good place, not in a good way. And this is like, it's almost like a biography of me. Now, that's to do the book a terrible disservice because it is perhaps the funniest book ever written. It starts off by being about this student. I don't think we even ever get to know his name. And his relationship with his uncle, whom he lives with and who pays for everything, but whom he completely disrespects. His uncle is described several times throughout the book as the holder of a Guinness clerkship, the third class, which is clearly meant as a. But almost on page one, you're introduced to the other three great heroes of the book. The Pooka McFellamy, who's a devil. And Mr. John Fursky, who's a Dubliner who goes around the place. And the great hero of the book is Finn McCool. A great legend, who's described on page one as being of such a size, it says, that 5 50s of fosterlings could play handball against the width of his backside.
That's some description.
It is, and the book goes backwards and forwards between those three characters. It's like 17 absurd novels all rolled into one. But in the middle of it, there is this description of Dublin in those days. A lot of the pubs feature. Grogan's Pub is probably the central pub. And the habits of students when I was a student, which I'm sure are totally different now. But in those days, we went around in dirty old coats and we drank pints of Guinness. And we drank far too many pints of Guinness. And we gave out yards about the world around us.
And nobody really had a washer to their name.
Not that much. Not that much. And you counted your pennies until you had the price of a pint. I'm sure students are much more sophisticated and enlightened now than they were then. But that book, well, it summed me up. And I fell in love with it the day I read it, and I've loved it ever since. The copy that I brought in with me is actually relatively new because the original copy had pages that were falling out of it. It's so thumbed, so dog-eared that you couldn't produce it in public.
And why do you return to it?
About 10 years ago. If ever you need a laugh, if ever you're feeling down in the dumps, pick it up. And I promise you, within 10 minutes, you'll be chuckling. You'll just be transported and chuckling. Now, you have to accept that it's not written about today. It's written about a different time and a different Dublin and different generations. But if you suspend your credibility sufficiently, you will struggle not to laugh at the adventures and at some of the language that is created. Are you familiar, for example, with the phrase, the pint of plain is your only man?
Yes, of course.
It's from At Swim Two Birds. Mr. Fursky, it's one of Mr. Fursky's famous phrases. And indeed, the indolent student of the central character, his best pal, will say to him again and again, the pint of plain is your only man. And he introduces him to pints of Guinness. Unfortunately, too many pints of Guinness make our hero vomit in the most disgusting ways. And there are several descriptions of that. So he transfers himself to bottled Guinness. I don't know if you can even get bottled Guinness anymore.
Okay, moving on to your honourable mention, something completely different, but perhaps given what you did for a big part of your life, it mightn't surprise people. It's The Final Days, which is that really forensic account of Richard Nixon's last few really dramatic months as president.
I was... We use the term nerd now to describe people who are absolutely obsessed with subjects and so on. We didn't have that term in those days, but I was routinely described as a Watergate anorak. I knew everything about Watergate. I lived it, I breathed it. I can still tell you who Rosemary Woods was. I can tell you who Donald Segretti was and what they did. I can tell you the names of a dozen or 100 characters in the Watergate saga that have been long forgotten. Judge John Sirica, James McCord. All of those sort of people. I was obsessed with the Watergate scandal.
Why?
Because I've always been, all my life, obsessed with the American presidency and American presidents. And if I had to choose a different biography, it probably would have been with Malice Towards None, which is the biography of Abraham Lincoln, the greatest political biography ever written. I'm obsessed with American hero presidents, and I'm obsessed with American villain presidents. As you can imagine, I cannot wait to read the definitive biography of the current American president. But this was something I had been waiting for and waiting for. I'd read All the President's Men. If I'm ever a contestant on Mastermind, even to this day, my chosen subject will be the Watergate conspiracy. And I challenge anyone to try to catch me out on it. Now, I'd have to do a bit of refreshing because it's a long time ago, but it all comes back to you.
And that is a well-worn copy that you've brought into the studio here.
Well, now, I tell you about this book. I was waiting and waiting and waiting. I was living in Cork at the time. I had, as it happens, to go to Dublin for a meeting the following day. And I decided that I would go to Cork early in the morning on a Thursday. And I would go to Easton's and I would get the first copy of The Final Days that came into Easton's that day. And it was a big, bulky, hardback book, and I paid more for it than I had ever paid for a book before because I wasn't expecting it to be in hardback. But I put it in my briefcase, and I hit the road to Dublin. And I got to the Kilcoran Lodge Hotel outside Care, and I could wait no longer. So I went into the Kilcoran Lodge Hotel. I booked coffee. I ordered coffee, sat down to read. I ordered lunch, kept reading. I cancelled my meeting for the following morning. I ordered dinner. I booked myself in overnight, and I sat up all night. This is absolutely true. I read the entire book
in one sitting.
And as you can see, I don't know what total, it's 400 and odd pages. It's a big, thick yoke. And I couldn't wait to get my hands on it. I couldn't wait to get to the end of it. And now they're not the greatest writers in the world, but this has the feel of something that Shakespeare might have written. It's Iago, it's Othello. It's just Shakespearean tragedy in its own sort of way.
What did it teach you about, I suppose, political disintegration, political collapse, what somebody does, what a leader does, like Richard Nixon, when the walls are literally closing in on him?
See, I wasn't working in politics then, but I worked in politics for many, many years afterwards. And the thing I learned to value most in the politicians I worked for and the politicians I observed is character. I think if they have character, they can overcome almost anything. Richard Nixon had perhaps more ability than almost any of his peers or successors. He was incredibly clever, incredibly bright, wise, a huge breadth of knowledge, and he had virtually no character at all. He was completely obsessed with petty revenge, with slights and grudges, and a bit like a president that we are familiar with now.
What to you is character? What do you mean by that?
Character is what's formed when you're a kid. I don't know if you heard James Comey in the last couple of days. James Comey's case has been thrown out, and the judge threw it out. And Comey made a little video thanking the judge and thanking the court and so on. And he said in the course of it, when I was a kid, he said, that sounded a little bit vainglorious, but hey, he said, when I was a kid, my parents would come into the room every morning and they'd open the blinds and they'd say, come on, boys, rise and shine and show the world what you're made of. That was how character was instilled in him. That's how character is instilled. I had a very modest father whom I trusted with everything. I would was always willing to talk to him. He was a man of his generation. You know, fathers in those generations were not demonstrative. I never got a hug from my dad. I never kissed my father. I kissed him when I saw him in his coffin. That was the only time I ever kissed my father, because we didn't do that in those days. But he taught me honour. He taught me trust. He taught me something to live up to. And I tried always. I failed more often than I succeeded, but I tried. That's what Nixon didn't have. And you can read it in his childhood. You can read it in all the biographies of him. He didn't have it.
You say you always have a book on the table stand, on the nightstand beside you. What's currently on that nightstand?
Terry's book. I have to declare an interest. Terry Pone is a great friend of mine. I really admire her. I've worked with her a lot. She's been really helpful to me. She's never trained me, but she's trained people I've asked her to help. Not professionally. She would hate people to know this. If you bring a disability activist to Terry who's in trouble, Terry will build that person's confidence free of charge and for nothing. And she's brilliant that way. So her latest book is called I'm Glad You Asked Me That Question. It's about her political work. And it is scintillating. Absolutely great fun.
Thank you so much for those choices, Fergus Finlay. Really enjoyed your selection for the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. And thanks for coming in to us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I love that.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.